Translation: O Narada, this science of God, Srimad Bhagavatam, was spoken to me in summary by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and it was spoken as the accumulation of His diverse potencies. Please expand this science yourself. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The Bhagavatam, in a nutshell, spoken by the Personality of Godhead in about half a dozen verses, which will appear ahead, is the science of God, and it is the potent representation of the Personality of Godhead. He, being absolute, is non-different from the science of God, Srimad Bhagavatam. Brahmaji received this science of Godhead from the Lord directly, and he handed over the same to Narada, who in his turn ordered Srila Vyasadeva to expand it. So the transcendental knowledge of the Supreme Lord is not mental speculation by the mundane wranglers, but is uncontaminated, eternal, perfect knowledge beyond the jurisdiction of material modes. The Bhagavat Purana is therefore the direct incarnation of the Lord in the form of transcendental sound, and one should receive this transcendental knowledge from the bona fide representative of the Lord in the chain of disciplic succession from the Lord to Brahmaji, from Brahmaji to Narada, from Narada to Vyas, from Vyasadeva to Shukadeva Goswami, from Shukadeva Goswami to Suta Goswami. The ripened fruit of the Vedic tree drops from one hand to another without being broken by falling suddenly from a high branch down to the earth. Therefore, unless one hears the science of Godhead from the bona fide representative of the disciplic succession, as above mentioned, for one to understand the theme of the science of Godhead will be a difficult job. It should never be heard from the professional Bhagavatam reciters who earn their livelihood by gratifying the senses of the audience. I'll read the verse again. Idam Bhagavatam Nama Yanme Bhagavato Ritam Sangraho Yam Vibhutinam Tvam Etad Vipuli Kuru. O Narada, the science of God, Srimad Bhagavatam, was spoken to me in summary by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and it was spoken as the accumulation of His diverse potencies. Please expand this science yourself. Om Gyanatimarandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshura Militam Jaina Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shivasadi Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Vanchakopatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyeva cha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pashtai Bhutalesh Naiti Shiva Swami Tanamani. So I pray for all of your blessings and good wishes. I can say something pertinent, although there's many senior and more learned and intelligent devotees here than me. What to speak of the hordes watching online. So this is an interesting verse spoken by Lord Brahma to Narada Muni, and he's talking about Bhagavatam. So there's lots of different places where in Bhagavatam we hear about Bhagavatam, which is good, because if Bhagavatam didn't tell us about Bhagavatam, we wouldn't know what Bhagavatam was and we wouldn't know the glories of it. And it's interesting that here, there's so many interesting things that come up with this verse, but it's interesting that here that Brahma is saying Krishna spoke the Bhagavatam to him, because it's going to be two chapters later that we're going to hear the Chaturshloki of the Bhagavatam, where Krishna speaks those four seed verses to Lord Brahma. Who knows the Chaturshloki here? Who knows those verses by heart? Govinda, you don't know the Chaturshloki? Kind of. You know, Prabhu? So who knows of the Chaturshloki, is aware of the Chaturshloki? Okay, so in the Bhagavatam, in the ninth chapter of this canto, verses 33. Does it begin with 33 or 32? I think 33. 35, yeah. Beginning with 33, this is the Chaturshloki. So just as the Bhagavad Gita has Chaturshloki, it has four key verses, four seed verses in the 10th chapter. So we have these four key verses in the second canto. And it's said that the Bhagavatam, the whole Bhagavatam is an expansion of these verses. So we should definitely be aware of these verses. We should learn these verses as well, because it's the essence of the Bhagavatam. If you can't learn all 18,000 verses of the Bhagavatam, then you can learn these four, and it's just as good. So we'll read these out, so devotees become more familiar with them. I'll just read the English. Brahma, it is I, the personality of Godhead, who was existing before the creation, when there was nothing but myself. Nor was there the material nature, the cause of this creation. That which you see now is also I, the personality of Godhead. And after annihilation, what remains will also be I, the personality of Godhead. So Krishna's explaining that he existed before the creation and existed after the creation as well. And then this verse is, I like this verse a lot. O Brahma, whatever appears to be of any value, if it is without relationship to me, know it is my illusory energy, that reflection which appears to be in darkness. Then, O Brahma, please know that the universal elements enter into the cosmos and at the same time do not enter into the cosmos. Similarly, I myself also exist within everything created and at the same time I am outside of everything. And then the last verse of the Chaturshloki. A person who is searching after the supreme absolute truth, the personality of Godhead, must certainly search for it up to this in all circumstances, in all space and time, and both directly and indirectly. So there you go. You've heard the essence of Srimad Bhagavatam. Those verses have been analyzed in lots of different ways, and it's not easy to kind of understand how the whole of the Bhagavatam is in those verses, but we can understand that if Krishna is there, then everything is there. But they're very important verses to know. And there are lots of kind of similar kind of verses in the Srimad Bhagavatam where different points are summarized and it's very kind of condensed. In the first canto, I'm sure devotees will be more aware of this, we have the pastime where Srila Vyasadeva has compiled all of the Vedas, but he's sitting there and he doesn't feel like he's done enough. He feels like something's missing. So at that time, Narada Muni appears, knowing what the situation is, and he speaks to Srila Vyasadeva, and he chastises Vyasadeva a little bit, although he recognizes his position as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as well as an incarnation. He says, you're totally qualified, your mind is spotless, but you have not properly delineated directly the pastimes of Krishna. So you've actually confused people. You've actually disturbed people by writing the Vedas. So you should just make it clear, just tell them, who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead? What does he do? How to approach him and how to serve him? And after Narada Muni says that to Vyasadeva, then Vyasadeva sits down in meditation, and because his heart is totally pure, he sees the personality of Godhead and he sees Mayadevi also, and they're also very nice verses. Let me see if I can remember them, where the whole of the Bhagavatam is also somewhat contained, because Vyasadeva sees the Bhagavatam and he sees Krishna, and then after he has that vision, then he writes the Bhagavatam. So he says, I'll try and do it by heart. Bhakti yogena manasi samyak pranihiti male apashyat purusham purnam maya chadhada pashrayam. So when he sits down in meditation, then he sees the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he also sees Mayadevi standing behind Krishna. Yaya samohito jiva atmanam tri gunatmikam padopi manutena tam tatkritam cha vipadyate. So it says that due to this illusory energy, the living entities think of themselves as material products, and thus they undergo reactions to material miseries. So due to Maya, we associate ourselves with this body, although actually we have nothing to do with this body. And because we associate with it, then we suffer. The example is given in the Bhagavatam also, I think I mentioned it before, about the moon and the reflection of the moon in the water. So we have the moon, it was just Purnim, must have been the last few days because the moon was so full. So if you have the moon, say a full moon, and then you have some water that's not frozen, then you can see the reflection of the moon. And if you throw a stone into the water, as my children like doing, or jump in the puddle with your Wellington boots on, hopefully Wellington boots, then the reflection will be totally disturbed and you won't be able to see the moon. But the moon is not affected. So the moon is not disturbed or touched or influenced in any way, but the reflection is. So because we identify with this body, although we actually have no connection with this body at all, or the soul doesn't, then when things happen to this body, we become very much affected. And not just our body, but everything that we relate to it. So there's one story how there was one gentleman, I think it was in Hungary, and there was a big storm. And you know, when there's a big storm, then trees collapse, trees fall over. So he came out of his house in the morning, and there was a bit of a mess in the street because of the storm. And one of the trees had fallen down and had smashed his car, had fallen right on top of his car. So when he came out of his house, he saw that his car had been smashed by this tree. He instantly had a heart attack and died. So nothing happened to him. The tree didn't hit him. It just hit his car. But because he associated with that car, thinking that it's mine, it's like non-different than me, then the shock was so much that he died instantly. And it may sound ridiculous, but we're doing exactly the same thing. It's exactly the same thing is happening to us, that if our family members are affected, or our money, something happens to our money in our bank account, or something happens to our body, then we also become disturbed, we also become affected. So in those verses, it's explaining that because we associate with the body, and because of the influence of Maya, then we identify with this body, and then we begin to suffer. Anato pasamam sakshad bhakti yoga madhoksuje lokasya janito vidvams chakre sattvata samhitam. So Vyasadeva, seeing the suffering of people in general due to their identifying with this body, then he compiled this Vedic literature, which is in relationship to the Supreme Truth. Yasyam vaishriyamanayam krishne padma purushe bhaktir utpajite pungsa shoka moha bayapaha. And then as soon as one hears the Bhagavatam, as soon as one hears the message of the Bhagavatam, then the lamentation, illusion, and fearfulness that we usually experience, shokam moha bayapaha, that disappears, and loving devotional sentiments for the Supreme Personality of Godhead arise within our heart. So it's interesting, even at that point, the Bhagavatam is talking about the Bhagavatam. Or the verses about Vyasadeva in trance is talking about how Vyasadeva compiled the Bhagavatam. So it's quite intricate. And there's lots of other verses describing Bhagavatam and the glories of Bhagavatam that we should be aware of, at least. Maybe we won't know all the verses, but we should be aware of them. There's this verse in the, I didn't check exactly what chapter it is, but I think it's 2nd Canto, 10th chapter, verse number 1, which is in here. Atrasargo vishargascha stanam poshanam utayaha manvantari shanukata nirodho mukti ashrayaha. You know that one, Govinda? So that is, Sri Sukadeva Goswami said, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, there are 10 divisions of statements regarding the following: the creation of the universe, sub-creation, planetary systems, protection by the Lord, the creative impetus, the change of manus, the science of God, returning home back to Godhead, liberation, and the summum bonum. So this is the structure of Bhagavatam. This is what Bhagavatam contains. It contains these different 10 subject matters. We'll speak a little bit in a minute about the Vedas and the structures of the Vedas, but the Bhagavatam, what part of the Vedas is the Bhagavatam? Don't you two tell me, you know what it is already, yeah. It's part of the Puranas, yeah. So how many Puranas are there? Yep. 18. And they're divided into three, right? So what are the three divisions of the Puranas? Not good, bad, and ugly, yeah? Yeah, that's right. So Bhagavatam is within the ones in the mode of goodness. Obviously they're better, the ones in the mode of goodness. But it's the Amala Purana, so it's the best Purana. And usually Puranas have five subject matters that they deal with, but Mahapuranas, they have 10 subject matters. And they always deal with these 10 subject matters. I'm not sure how many Mahapuranas there are, do you know? Not sure if there's more than one, but maybe, maybe not. Anyway, these 10 subject matters, they always contain, this is the structure of the Puranas. So they have the creation, sub-creation, planetary systems, protection by the Lord, creative impetus, the change of manus, the science of God, returning home back to Godhead, liberation, and the summum bonum. That's why you see also in the Bhagavatam, they have this genealogy. We have these lists of people, lists of kings and their descendants. It has this in other Puranas as well, because that is the way that the Puranas are structured. So the Puranas aren't Shruti. We have the four Vedas. Can somebody tell me what the four Vedas are? Anybody on the ladies' side? Other two? Rig Veda, Yajur Veda, Sama Veda, and Atharva Veda, yeah. So these are the four Vedas, which scholars seem to think is more important, the four Vedas. We don't necessarily agree. Actually, we don't agree. We don't agree that the four Vedas are the most important. They also say that they're older, but we don't agree with that either. So we have the four Vedas, Rig, Sama, Yajur, and Atharva. And those four Vedas each have divisions. They're all divided into four. Can't see very well. And they're divided into Samhitas, Brahmanas, Aranyakas, and Upanishads. So I'll just read this. This is from a bona fide website, ISKCON Educational Services. One, the Samhitas, literally collections, in this case of hymns and mantras, they form the Veda proper. Two, the Brahmanas, so these are the divisions of the Vedas, but how the Vedas are composed. The Brahmanas, prose manuals of ritual and prayer for the guiding priests. They tend to explain the Samhitas. They also contain early versions of some stories. Three, the Aranyakas, literally forest books for hermits and saints. They are philosophical treatises. And four, the Upanishads, books of philosophy, also called Vedanta, or the end or conclusion of the Vedas. So, Srimad Bhagavatam is not contained within those four, either of those four, but it's contained within the itihasas, or the histories. But we believe that the Bhagavatam is the most important. It says, right, in the first verse, in the second verse, this is a ripened fruit of the tree of Vedic literatures. Nigamakalpa taro galitam palam shukumukadamitadrava samitam. It's a ripened fruit of the tree of Vedic literatures. So this is the essence of all scriptures. So how is that if it's not part of the original four Vedas? Well, the most philosophical part of those four Vedas, all of them contain Upanishads, is the Upanishads. And within that is Vedanta, or that can be called Vedanta. We also have Vedanta Sutra. And this is considered, or this is, the commentary on Vedanta Sutra by the same author. So usually we don't have commentaries on books by the same author, right? You don't usually write a book and then write a book about the book that you wrote, or especially within that book. But sometimes it happens. Like Brihadbhagavatamrita, Sanatana Goswami wrote his Digdarshini Tika, his Digdarshini commentary on Bhagavatamrita. Which is also interesting because it's said that the Bhagavatamrita was revealed to Sanatana Goswami, so he just saw the Bhagavatam, and he wrote it down. So he doesn't consider it his composition, it's just something that he's seen and recorded. So he wrote a commentary on that. So Srila Vyasadeva, he also wrote a commentary on the Vedanta Sutra, which he had written originally, and that is Srimad Bhagavatam. He's expanding on the Vedanta Sutra, which is the, you could say, the essence of the Vedas, or the highest part of the Vedas, the most philosophical part of the Vedas. Because if we don't realize that the Vedas, actually a lot of it is not palatable for a Vaishnava. It deals with lots of different things. We have three different divisions of the Vedas. We have Karmakanda, Jnanakanda, and Upasanakanda. So Karmakanda is all about performing fruitive sacrifices for material gains. So for having a nice wife, or going to the heavenly planets, or getting a lot of money, or being healthy. We hear that in the Bhagavatam also. There's verses in the first canto where it says, for one of them says, for powerful sex you should worship, who is it? Indra. Govinda knows that one by hand. But there's lots of other ones there, right? For good wife, or for progeny, and it has a whole list in that verse of Bhagavatam who you should worship and what you're going to get, and you can imagine that it's a similar thing in the Karmakandiya sections of the Vedas. So a lot of the Vedas, for Vaishnava, if someone came and said, okay, here's the Vedas, it would be like, well, you know, I want to worship Krishna, I want to go back to Godhead, and this isn't so relevant for me. Jnanakanda also, we don't want to just cultivate knowledge and merge into the impersonal Brahman, which is usually the goal of jnanis. So that's not also particularly interesting. We want Upasana Kanda. We want the nectar of devotion. We want to worship Krishna. We want to sacrifice. We want to serve. We want surrender. We want the nectar of pleasing Krishna. And a very interesting thing that Krishna did is that most of the Vedas are lost now. I've heard that 95% of the Vedas are lost. I'm not sure if that figure is totally accurate. But if you want to read Rig Veda, it may be not so easy to get it, to find it. But the only section that's remained of the Vedas, of the millions of verses contained within the Vedas, is the Upasana Kanda. And it's Srimad Bhagavatam, it's Bhagavad Gita, and a few other literatures. So, because in this age we don't have 100,000 years like they did in Satyayuga to sit down and study, or 10,000 years or like they had in Dwapara Yuga, or 1,000 years in Treta, when it actually goes in order, the yugas. So we've only got 100 years, and of that we've only got 20, 30 years where we're actually doing something, we're awake, we're adults, and we can read and spend our time doing that. Krishna's taken everything away, taken away all the Karmakanda, all the Jnanakanda, only the Upasanakanda is left. So that's all we have access to. So very kindly arranged it like that. So we believe that Srimad Bhagavatam is the essence of the essence. The Vedanta means Bhakti Vedanta Mana. Vedanta means the end of all knowledge, the conclusion of all knowledge, Vedanta. And this is the commentary on that. So this is like the cream, it's the essence. You have the milk, and then you take off the top of it, you get the cream, you get the essence of it. And there's a pastime related to that, how Baladeva Vidyabhushan, he was alive, he was disciple of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. And at that time, I don't remember who it was exactly, I believe it was the smarter brahmanas, they were challenging the authority of Gaudiya Vaishnavas, saying that you're not bona fide, and the reason... Was it Brahmanandis? Ramanandis, thank you. So they were saying, you Gaudiya Vaishnava is not bona fide because you don't have a commentary on the Vedanta Sutra. And that was a real challenge to Gaudiya Vaishnavism at that time. But the reason we didn't have a commentary on Vedanta Sutra is because the Bhagavatam is already a commentary on the Vedanta Sutra written by the same author. But they didn't accept that. So Baladeva Vidyabhushan, he rose to that challenge. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur was old at that time. He said, you do it. Although I believe Vishwanath Chakravarti was the leader of the Vaishnavas at that time, the Gaudiya Vaishnavas. And then at that time, Govinda, the deity, Radha Govinda deity, he spoke to Baladeva Vijayabhushan, and he compiled Govinda Bhashya in a very short space of time, and he presented that to the Ramanandis, and they accepted it and were defeated. So that's just related to commentaries on Vedanta and Bhagavatam being a commentary. So we can see in different places that Bhagavatam is speaking about itself and explaining how important it is. And actually, my spiritual master often says that Bhagavatam begins with chanting the holy names of the Lord. What is the verse in the beginning of the Bhagavatam that talks about chanting the holy name? You're not sure? Is it not the verse Kale Dosha Nite Rajan? Is that at the end? I don't know the verse that is at the beginning. If anybody finds out, then let me know. I don't think it would take much research. Shishi Radha Gokula Nanda Ki Jai. But chanting the holy name is mentioned all throughout Srimad Bhagavatam. And the last verse of Bhagavatam is also speaking about the glories of chanting the holy names. Let me just find it. So this is a very interesting chapter. It's the last chapter of Bhagavatam. It's the last chapter of the 12th canto. Chapter 13, and it's called The Glories of Srimad Bhagavatam. And there's many, many beautiful verses here explaining how wonderful Bhagavatam is. It says here, it was to Lord Brahma that the Supreme Personality of Godhead first revealed the Srimad Bhagavatam in full. At the time, Brahma, frightened by material existence, was sitting on the lotus flower that had grown from the Lord's navel. From beginning to end, the Srimad Bhagavatam is full of narrations that encourage renunciation of material life, as well as nectarian accounts of Lord Hari's transcendental pastimes, which give ecstasy to the saintly devotees and demigods. This Bhagavatam is the essence of all Vedanta philosophy, because its subject matter is the absolute truth, which, while non-different from the spirit soul, is the ultimate reality, one without a second. The goal of this literature is exclusive devotional service unto that supreme truth. A beautiful verse. So that was number 12. Number 13 is the famous verse in Bhagavatam that talks about distributing Bhagavatam. It says, if on the full moon day of the month of Bhadra, one places Srimad Bhagavatam on a golden throne and gives it as a gift, he will attain the supreme transcendental destination. So it indicates the benefits one can achieve by distributing Srimad Bhagavatam. Lots of other nice verses here, but the last one says, this is the last verse of the Bhagavatam. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the Supreme Lord Hari, the congregational chanting of whose holy names destroys all sinful reactions, and the offering of obeisances unto whom relieves all material suffering. So it's explained that Bhagavatam speaks throughout its cantos about the glories of chanting the holy name, which is the Yuga Dharma now, and shows us that that is the process that we should take up to become purified. Can anybody think of one of the pastimes in the middle of the Bhagavatam which glorifies the chanting of the holy name? Ajamil, yeah. So we hear there about the benefits of even chanting Namabhas, which means Ajamil, for those who aren't familiar with the pastimes, that Ajamil was a brahmana but a fallen brahmana, and then he engaged in all types of sinful activities. But he'd named his son Narayan, and because he'd called his son Narayan, and at the time of death he was saved from any type of punishment because he'd been chanting the holy name of the Lord. And even the Yamadutas were confused by this because they'd seen what kind of activities he'd performed. They said, well, how can he be sinless? The Vishnudutas came and stopped the Yamadutas. You can't take him, he's sinless. How can he be sinless? He's performed so many sins. They said, no, because he's been chanting the holy names of the Lord. And it's explained in Chaitanya Charitamrita also. There's a conversation between Haridas Thakur and, is it Lord Chaitanya, I believe? And Haridas Thakur is saying that not only Namabhas, if you chant the name of the Lord unconsciously or not with devotion, but even if the syllables of the holy name are separated, you still get benefit from chanting the holy name of the Lord. So in Hungary they have a margarine, it's called Rama margarine. So when anybody goes to buy that margarine and says, I'd like some Rama margarine please, then they get benefit of saying that holy name. But also, can anybody think of an example how the syllables would be split up? Ra, or Ma, somewhere. Banana Rama, that has Rama right in it. Huh? They say Haram. But that's in one place. But even if they're split up, so even you get benefit for that. So, yeah, the Bhagavatam talks about the benefits and the glories of chanting the holy name. I have a question for you, Prabhus and Matajis. So how do you define Bhagavatam, though? If we're talking about Bhagavatam and the benefits of hearing Bhagavatam, the glories of Bhagavatam, how do you define Srimad Bhagavatam? Any ideas? No? Undefinable? Sorry? Yeah, that's one of the qualities of it. But what is the Bhagavatam? So we show you, this is Bhagavatam, right? This is the second canto, part two. But we have so many other cantos. Is that it? That's the Bhagavatam. And anything else other than that is not Bhagavatam? Is that right? Because this is Bhagavatam class, right? So, what I'm speaking, is that Bhagavatam as well? Yeah? Yeah. Could be. Yeah.
Any discussion about the Lord and his devotees could be classed as Bhagavatam.
Any discussion about the Lord and his devotees could be classed as Bhagavatam. But I have a question, is it the same quality? So if you have some like new devotees who just joined the temple a couple of weeks ago and they're saying, you know, they're talking about Bhagavatam, is that the same as 10th canto, Srimad Bhagavatam? I don't think it's the same, but did you want to say something?
Maybe it's the type, well, it says in this report, the verse that it's the type of literary information, or it's not different from the tradition itself. So it has some character, the quality type.
Yeah, it's the literary incarnation of Krishna. It's non-different than Krishna himself. So you could say Krishna is Bhagavatam, as wherever Krishna is, he's Bhagavatam. Of course, Krishna is everywhere. It's just an interesting question for me because we hear that there's different versions of Bhagavatam, right? We hear about Mahabharata. We have Mahabharata in this world, which is 100,000 verses. It says in the heavenly planets, they have Mahabharata, which is a million verses. So which one is the Mahabharata? Which one is the real Mahabharata? Can the real Mahabharata please stand up? So there can be different versions of it, different manifestations of Mahabharata. Yes, Puri? Okay. Yeah. Nice. So that's particularly referring to this structure of Bhagavatam. Because I've also heard that Bhagavatam has a longer version in the heavenly planets. And here also we hear that who speaks the Bhagavatam? Let's do this quickly. Who speaks the Bhagavatam here? Sorry? Shukadeva Goswami. And who else? Suta Goswami. And who else? Maitreya. And who else? The Kumaras. So who did the Kumaras hear it from? Who? Hamsa. I thought they heard it from Anantashesh. So there's all different Bhagavatams going on, you know, within the Bhagavatam. So like, and we don't hear in this Bhagavatam about the whole thing that Hamsa or Anantashesh spoke to the Kumaras. So there's different Bhagavatams going on in different places. It's a difficult thing to define. I don't think it's so clear you can just say, okay, these 12 cantos, this, which also contains Prabhupada's commentaries. So, you know, a few hundred years ago, that wouldn't be the whole Bhagavatam. It would be a lot smaller. That is Bhagavatam and nothing else. So, anyway, it's an interesting topic. And another version of Bhagavatam is, I don't know if many of you have heard the story that when Krishna left the planet 5,000 years ago, then he took almost all of his associates with him. They all went back with him to the spiritual world. The demigods went back to their positions in the heavenly planets. But there was one devotee who had to stay behind. Anybody know who that was? It was Shukadeva Goswami. So Krishna said, I'm going to go back to Goloka Vrindavan. Everybody else is going to go back. You're going to stay here in this material world. He said, you have a mission to perform. You're going to have to speak Srimad Bhagavatam to Maharaj Parikshit later. So Shukadeva Goswami had to stay. And but what form was Shukadeva Goswami in when he was in Krishna Lila? Yeah, he was Shuka, the parrot. So he was a parrot at that time. So Shuka was a parrot flying around. Like we have these green parrots flying around here, so we can remember Shukadeva. When we see them. So he was flying around and Krishna had gone, all the devotees had gone, and he was lamenting, wanting association. So he flew to Lord Shiva's abode. And at that time, Lord Shiva was speaking Bhagavatam. And if it was exactly this Bhagavatam, if he was saying exactly these Sanskrit verses, or it was his own Bhagavatam, his own realization, or what it was, maybe it was this exactly the same, I don't know. But he was speaking Bhagavatam and Parvati was sitting there listening to him. Have anybody heard this story before? Yeah, some of you have. Oh, good, I'm glad it's bona fide. So he was speaking Bhagavatam, Parvati was sitting there, and Shukadeva Goswami was so happy to hear Bhagavatam. So he's perched on a tree and listening to the Bhagavatam, enjoying the Bhagavatam. But there was a danger, and the danger was that Parvati was starting to fall asleep. So when Parvati was starting to fall asleep, Lord Shiva was in ecstasy. He was just reciting Bhagavatam. His eyes were closed. And sometimes he would say, isn't this wonderful, Devi? Or isn't that an amazing point? And Parvati would say, yes, my Lord. And then Shuka could see that she's falling asleep. And she was going to notice that she's falling asleep. And he's going to stop reciting or get angry with her. Or who knows what's going to happen. Shiva can get angry. He's Ashutosh, easily angered and easily pleased. So next time Shiva said, what a beautiful verse from the Bhagavatam, isn't it, Devi? Then Shukadeva said, yes, very beautiful, in Parvati's voice. Parvati was asleep. So Shiva continued reciting Bhagavatam. Isn't this a beautiful verse? What an interesting point. Yes, what an interesting point, Pati. And then at some point Shiva opened his eyes and he saw that his wife is asleep and there's a parrot there. So immediately he became very angry. He realized this parrot has been tricking me. So he ran after Shuka. Shuka ran here, there. They ran through. I don't know exactly where. I won't speculate. But they were running. Shuka was running, flying away from Shiva. Sure isn't an easy job. And he was flying here and there. And then ultimately he saw Vyasadeva and his wife Satyavati. Vyasadeva's wife. No, Satyavati was his mother. I don't know the name of his wife. But Shuka flew. He saw Vyasadeva. He saw his wife. His wife had her mouth open for some reason. Shukadeva flew right into her mouth. So he took shelter there. And Shiva didn't do anything because she was a woman. And then Shuka stayed in her womb for 16 years. And then he was born as Shukadeva Goswami. So that's another version of Bhagavatam. Shiva was speaking Bhagavatam and Shuka heard from him. There's another version, I don't know if you've heard this. This one's quite funny, how even in the spiritual world then they have a Srimad Bhagavatam class. And one time Purnamasi was giving the Bhagavatam class. She is a Brahmani. She's the mother of Nandimukhi and no, is she the mother of Nandamukha? She's the mother of Gargamuni, I think. And Madhumangal is the son of Gargamuni. Am I getting it right? Anyway, they're all in the same family. So she was giving the class. They're brahmanas. Most of them are Vaishyas in Goloka Vrindavan, and they're all cowherd boys and girls. But there's a few brahmanas like Madhumangal. He's in that family. So Purnamasi was giving the Bhagavatam class. And the gopis were all in the class. It was for the gopis. The gopis were there. Lalita, Vishaka, Radharani, Tungavidya, Induleka, and the others. But they were falling asleep as well. They were falling asleep in the Bhagavatam class. This doesn't mean that falling asleep in Bhagavatam class is bona fide, but it can happen. So she was giving class. The gopis were falling asleep and she was noticing this and she said, "What are you doing? I'm giving class and you're sitting here falling asleep." And they said, "Sorry, Mother, we've been out dancing all night with Krishna in the Rasa dance and it's very difficult for us to stay awake in the Bhagavatam class, so please forgive us." So, many versions of Bhagavatam, unlimited glories of Srimad Bhagavatam, there's so many other things we could have said, but we've run out of time. But I think for us the main thing is Srimad Bhagavatam is Prabhupada's vision and his meditation. Prabhupada, when he had the Bhagavatam, or at least he had printed the first canto of the Bhagavatam, he had that and he felt, okay, I've got the Bhagavatam. I have my commentaries on Bhagavatam, I printed it, now I can go to the West and I can spread Krishna consciousness. So Srila Prabhupada gave us Srimad Bhagavatam. We see that nice picture sometimes of Prabhupada, black and white picture of Prabhupada in the Radha Damodara temple, sitting looking out at the Samadhi of Rupa Goswami. So you can just imagine Prabhupada was there writing his Bhagavatam, writing his commentaries on Bhagavatam. And just as it says here in this verse that, "O Narada, the science of God, Srimad Bhagavatam, was spoken to me in summary by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and it was spoken as the accumulation of his diverse potencies." This is today's verse. "Please expand this science yourself." So Srila Prabhupada expanded this science, and we can expand it also by distributing Srimad Bhagavatam. We can go out and distribute Srila Prabhupada's Bhagavatam that he gave us, and then many other people can come in contact with it and enjoy the nectar of Srimad Bhagavatam. Okay, thank you very much for your attention. Please forgive any mistakes or offenses. If anybody has any quick questions or comments, then go ahead. Otherwise, we'll finish here. Ispari.
Haribo. Thank you for your stimulating class, Prabhu. You raised the question, where in the Bhagavatam it begins with the holy name and ends with the holy name, right?
Yeah.
Now, one option is the 14th verse of the first chapter. "Living beings who are entangled in the complicated meshes of birth and death can be freed immediately by even unconsciously chanting the holy name of Krishna, which is feared by fear personified." Maybe that.
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah, feared by fear personified. How does the Sanskrit go?
Apana samsritim gorim. Hold on a sec. Yanama vivasho grinan tato sajo vimucheta yad bibeti svayam bayam.
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah, that's the verse. So it begins, that's what my spiritual master says, it begins with the holy name, ends with the holy name, speaks about the holy name throughout it. So also in scripture, what it begins with and ends with, and that's considered primary topic. Okay, thank you very much. Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.